Welcome to the Dave Chang Show, part of the Ringer Podcast Network. This is David Chang. Not your normal podcast. This podcast is going to try to address the debate that's been playing out over the past few days over social media news about Momofuku enforcing its trademark of the term chili crunch. If you haven't been following along, and not everybody has, so I don't want this to be strange if you're listening to this. Essentially, what's happened is that when we started selling Momofuku Chili Crunch in 2020, and I know this sounds asinine, but it's true, and it really was important to us, we thought the word crunch would separate us from sauces like Laogama and other sauces that had the word crisp. But what we're learning this week, and in a painful way learning, is that the terms crunch and crisp are essentially the same thing in Mandarin. In holding the term crunch as a trademark, Momofuku can be seen as trying to own a piece of Chinese culture and heritage, which is exactly the opposite of what we wanted to achieve. It can also be seen that we're trying to squeeze people out of the space and have, you know, trying to be a monopoly and not play nice. I can totally understand how people could see these things, but I don't know how I can have you trust me, but it's the truth. This is not the case. Anyway, I hope this podcast will be able to explain some of these things to you. It's really complicated. I mean, I don't think nuance is the right word, but there's a lot of information. But most importantly, I wanted to accomplish three things. First and foremost, I want to apologize to everyone in the AAPI community who's been hurt or feels like I've marginalized them or put a ceiling on them by our actions. There's a lot of chefs that I'm friends with. There's a lot of people that are upset, customers. And that's the last thing, literally the last thing I wanted to happen. I've spent the greater part of my adult life trying to bring light to Asian food, Asian American food, Asian identity, what it means to be Asian American. I mean, I understand why people are upset, and I'm truly sorry. And if I'm missing things, if I'm not seeing things as clearly as I could have, I am sorry. I'm trying. I am fallible. Momofuku is fallible, clearly. Secondly, I want to go through the timeline and the rationale of how we got here in 2024. It's important to understanding our position. I can't ask you to want to understand our position, but I think the timeline and the rationale is crucial to literally making you believe me. And these are just the facts. And thirdly, I want to outline how we Momofuku are going to rectify the situation going forward. I'm going to be joined with Marguerite Mariscal, the CEO of Momofuku. And she's here to help me articulate how she's been processing all this information and the plan moving forward. And also to help me understand a lot of things that I've been learning this week about trademark and patents, et cetera. It's not necessarily the easiest thing. Because Marguerite, like me, is not a trademark expert, but she's been working so hard to understand everything and all the nuances to fix the situation for everybody. She's been working so hard this week. And anyway, there's a lot of nuance to the situation. It's been a long, long week with a lot of learning and realizations. Anyway, let's get on to the podcast. When all of this happened last week, I learned of it for the first time, and I've been trying to get into it as deeply as I can to help remedy the situation.
Yeah, and as a business, we've been taking time to listen to the issues that our community is raising and figure out what options are available to us as a business. And we'll get to that more later.
I think it's important to know something about Momofuku culinary philosophy is that it's a little bit of everything. Even from the first time we did Momofuku ramen in 2004, we did not use katsuobushi or any dried fish. We use American bacon, Benton's bacon, to recreate certain flavors. Those are the things that are important to me because at the end of the day, I feel like the delicious things, there are a lot of overlaps throughout culture. And that's how we like to weave and find that overlap if it's a Venn diagram. Fast forward to our laboratory that we developed all kinds of fermented products. And that we decided that we were going to get into selling consumer product goods. And we started off with salts. And then it was going to be a chili sauce, right? And again, just so you to reiterate the naming on our salts, it's not what's the name of the salt that we were normally like most people do, like a seasoning all or whatever. We called our savory salt because that's what it is. We did not want to make a facsimile of things that are out there. We did not want to make something that was a copy of anything. Certainly one of the inspirations for our sauce was Lao Gan Ma. It's the OG. It's delicious. And in my opinion, it's like, why would we try to do anything that is remotely close to that? I have nothing but respect for Chinese, Asian culture in general. You may not believe me, fine. But like, I feel like the proof is in the pudding there, right? And when we're thinking about naming, the last thing I and again, shame on me if I didn't know this, but like we named it Chili Crunch specifically because it was not Chili Crisp. And we named it Chili Crunch because it was out of deference to Chili Crisp, which we associated as Chinese, specifically carved out by Lao Gan Ma. Our Chili Crunch, much like the philosophy of many things in our food, was not going to be based on something that authentically Chinese, right? It was going to be something that was our story to tell. A lot of it was going to be clearly an inspiration of Lao Gan Ma. We've said this from day one. The other thing was, and this was all like a holy fuck moment for me, is I didn't have salsa matcha until I was in Copenhagen. A version of salsa matcha, which is a relatively recent salsa in Mexican cuisine. Because the version I had had soy sauce in it. And I was like, oh, that's just such an interesting merger of how chilies came from Mexico, blah, blah, blah. And of all places, I'm having it in Copenhagen. And that's when I was like, oh, wait a second. Things can be similar, but different in a lot of different cultures. Added on to salsa seca, which was a dry salsa. And actually, the first time I had that was on Ugly Delicious when we had East Side Tacos. So I began to like think, like, how do we merge the Sam chili sauce, Lao Gan Ma, salsa matcha, salsa seca into one thing? And that's what we came up with. And it wasn't Chili Crisp. It was crunchy. I love alliteration. People know that work with me. And I sort of circle the wagons around Captain Crunch and Catalina Crunch, two cereals. And I was like, oh, ours is going to be Chili Crunch, and we can make that distinctly different. Let me reiterate. We named it Chili Crunch out of respect and deference to Chinese heritage and Chinese food culture. Not to take. Let me just sort of summarize this. Had I known, or Momofuku known, that Chili Crunch was a tautology, basically the same as Chili Crisp, we would never have named it Chili Crunch. I would have come up with, you know, something else. So again, the next timeline that's important is we ironically received the cease and desist letter from Chili Colonial. And I think Marguerite can explain a little bit more. And I think it's important to note that the cease and desist letter of Chili Colonial, based out of Colorado, is based on Mexican flavors, not anything that's Chinese. And we found out, were the owners of the mark, and they started their product in 2008.
Yeah. The founder of Chili Crunch, where we received the cease and desist from. She was born in Mexico City and had a product that she called Chili Crunch, and she was the first person in the market and was able to trademark that. And I think interestingly, and I think there's a really good article in Taste recently about Trader Joe's, where, you know, their playbook is essentially to white label products and, you know, basically take ideas from small businesses. And so there was a history where Trader Joe's started making a product called Chili Onion Crunch, modeled off of her salsa matcha inspired sauce. And she was actually able in 2020 to get them to change the name. So from there, when we received the cease and desist, we, instead of changing the name, which is what she was asking us to do, worked with her to actually purchase the mark, so that we could continue using the Chili Crunch name that we had come up with, you know, back in 2020. And in addition to selling us the trademark, we then in turn gave Chili Crunch a perpetual license to continue to use the name. You know, so like in, you know, when we acquired this mark, it then became our job to protect it. So the reason that we received a cease and desist from Chili Colonial is the same exact reason that Momofuku was sending them out, which is if you don't show the USPTO that you're routinely defending your mark, and that's from any size business, large, small, regardless, they don't differentiate, then you're at risk of losing your trademark because someone could come through and say, you know, you haven't been defending it. You aren't the owner. I should have it. So we, in the past year, sent cease and desist to companies that were using the Chili Crunch mark the same way that Chili Colonial had been doing, you know, prior to 2023. So some of the companies that we sent letters to were small, and some of them were quite big, way bigger than Momofuku.
The moment I learned that the issue with what I feel to be the main issue is taking Chinese cultural heritage from people in the name Chili Crunch, that instant I was like, no, this is not acceptable. We got to get rid of it.
Yeah. And I wish it was that simple. I'm not a lawyer. So a lot of this has been education for the company as well, of kind of understanding the intricacies of trademark law. And if you were to drop it and just say, you know, we no longer want to own this mark, the trademark office has decided that this is a trademark. We didn't trademark it ourselves. It has existed for many years. And so if we drop it, then essentially it's just a mark out in the world to be picked up. So if we drop it, anyone, you know, could come and just purchase it, and then they would be the owner of the mark. So there's no way for us, and we've looked into this, to deem a mark generic. Like if we could go to the USPTO and say, hey, this shouldn't exist as a mark. You know, we want it to be used by everyone. That's not something that we as a business can do. And it's also not something that the USPTO can do. And so we were kind of stuck with a dilemma of like, all right, well, where do we go from here? If we were to let the trademark go, the term Chili Crunch can be claimed tomorrow by anyone in, you know, more likely another company that with the resources and the desire to actually litigate everyone who's using the mark currently. So that would be us, Chili Crunch with an E, and everyone else in the space using the word. So while that option sounds great, it's hard to actually execute in practice.
I'm going to give you a real insight, and it's going to sound totally off the fucking wall. How I started, it was so hard for me to understand the legalese of this that how I started to understand what was happening and our options at play was Fellowship of the Ring with Bilbo. And what do you do with the ring that you can't destroy and you got to get rid of and you want to just bury it so no one can get to it? And that might sound crazy, but for those of the people that understand what I'm talking about, like that's sort of it. Once we understood the power of this thing, it was like, oh, we got to get rid of it. This is not for us to use. But we can't give it away and we can't destroy it. Not to my knowledge. That being said, there were a couple other options. Number one, I was like, well, then let's just share it. We'll all wear this fucking ring together, right? So I was like, let's just give it to everybody and we'll carry this stupid trademark together.
That is something that's not allowed by the USPTO. So basically, Dave, if you were to license it to everyone and anyone can have it, that's what's called, I've learned, a naked license, which means if there's no parameters in which you ascribe this group who gets to license it, then it's the same exact thing as dumping it. Someone could come and say, hey, that's a naked license. They're not defending it. I should be the owner of Chili Crunch. And then it just moves to, you know, the Trader Joe's of the world. I mean, we've definitely, over the past few days, have been trying to figure out what we can do. And we're hearing people who are saying, you know, this shouldn't exist. Like, you know, why is this a trademark? And we're hearing it and we're listening. And the reality is just we as a business can't decide what is and what is not a trademark. But what we can do is control how we operate and how we act as the person who owns this mark.
So I had another idea that I presented to everybody. It's like, why don't we try to see the ability to license it to anybody, not just the 7 or 8 or whatever it is. And that could be twofold. One is like a penny, you know, pay a penny, you get your license to do Chili Crunch. Or, you know, it's higher end where it's a certain amount of threshold where it's like you're doing X amount of revenue or it's the size of your company or something to determine that you are a big behemoth or not. But also, with everything that's happening, I don't want us to be the determining factor of what's big or what's small. Because also, if you even look at some of the companies that we sent a cease and desist letter to, some of them are bigger than us. All right. Some of them have raised more money. They do bigger business than us. And that's just, honestly, that sort of pissed me off that wasn't come out to light enough. Right. But I just felt, especially with the sentiment, I'm like, I don't want us to be the arbiter of anything. So I guess that's fucking out. Came up with another idea. How do we do this? And I have to say, I think this one is still open. And if anybody's listening that's in charge of a not-for-profit or charity, listen, you want to take this thing? You want to take the ring? Let's give it to you, man. And I was like, well, there's nothing in the law that says we can't give this to a not-for-profit or charity or some organization that's BIPOC or established in the AAPI community to operate. Well, we're all ears. That might be the best approach and happy to do that. So part of the issue, whether you're an organization or a single person or one company, if you have this trademark, you then become the judge, jury as well about who deserves this, who gets to use it, etc. So the way I interpreted it and the plan moving forward with this trademark is and it's a strange way of sort of taking the power away from it is by doing nothing. We're not going to enforce the trademark. We're not going to police the trademark. And, by doing so, it's possible that it becomes a generic term and nobody can own it.
As a business, we're taking the risk that by not enforcing it, someone could come along, someone much bigger than us can come along, say that we're not enforcing it, and therefore they should own the mark.
How I interpret it in Tolkien speak, there's no way to destroy it. There's no Mount Doom. There's no way to do anything. So we just got to hide this fucking thing. And that's what we got to do.
The risk of the business is that someone comes and says that we're not defending, some bigger company comes and says we're not defending it. And tries to take the mark, but it's a risk we're willing to take.
And I don't want this to be seen as being inactive or being apathetic to the situation or us being, trying to have monopolistic powers or anything like that. Our activity here, our choice is to do nothing, right? That is our action, is inactivity, no enforcement, no policing of this trademark. And if there's a better plan, we're all ears. If there's a charity that wants it, great. If we can figure out how to do this and prevent multi-billion dollar corporations from doing this, fantastic. We're all ears. And, just to know that we would like to do this together and in solidarity with the community. I just want to reiterate that, I hope those that we upset will one day forgive us. And I hope with our actions, we'll be able to earn that forgiveness. We can't ask for it. And the other thing is this, we make mistakes and that's how we always learn. And that's just who we are and what we do. It means a lot to us that we get everybody to see that, right? You don't have to like our product, but I just don't want people to know that we're not a fucking evil company trying to fuck people over. So to all the Trader Joe's and other Chili Crunch producers out there, and there's so many, they're delicious and they're really, really great. We're not going to stand in the way of anyone using this name. It's not going to happen. That being said, I'm a fairly competitive person. And I truly believe that our product is unique and delicious. And there's a lot of delicious products out there. But I'm wishing all of you guys the best of luck. We'll see you out there, whether it's in the grocery stores or somewhere else. And thank you for listening.